What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, nothing is harder to track than the truth, and we will talk about it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I'm one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, and here with me, Mike Duranik and Brad Miller. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Doing well. Round two tonight for the movies, and having fun hanging with you guys, so doing just fine.
Yeah, excited to talk this movie with you guys. It's a different movie than we've done recently, although I think it does fit thematically with a couple of movies that we've reviewed on this podcast before in some ways, and excited to get your thoughts on it.
Let's dive into it, guys. We're talking Wind River this week on the podcast. Came out in August of 2017, so it is yet another movie that got robbed in 2017 by the fish pornography itself, The Shape of Water, just so we can get that out of the way. But gentlemen, before I get on too much of a rant about this movie, let me ask you the question that I always do. And what was your first experience with Wind River, if you had one? I do think, if memory serves, this may have been the first experience for at least one of you, but let's talk about it. Wind River, did you see it in theaters in 2017? Did you catch it later? And then what did you bring in to this rewatch? And if you haven't seen it, what did you know about this movie?
I have seen it. This is one that you talked a lot about over the last few years, and I remember you talking about this as well as Sicario. And I remember the first time thinking, like, those are just kind of like weird names for movies, and they didn't have that sort of kind of draw you an appeal, because just on the name alone, I would not have watched Wind River. But you talked about it, you pushed me to seeing it, and I watched it at home. And then I guess I will wait to reveal my thoughts about the movie. But it was my second time seeing it. So, I'm glad you picked it, because it's going to give us some good things to talk about, I think.
Yeah. And your memory serves correct. This is the first time that I had ever watched it. When you brought it up, it was the first time I had ever heard of it. And so walking in, once I took a look at who the actors were, I thought that this was a really, really bizarre Marvel prequel movie, an origin story. And I only got more confused about that as I watched the movie.
Yes, quite an interesting casting choice there with the experiences that these two have had together. My first experience with it was not in theaters, surprisingly. I was already a big Taylor Sheridan fan. He wrote Sicario and then wrote Hell or High Water, which is another fantastic film. Got nominated for Hell or High Water for his writing. And then a studio was like, you know what, buddy, why don't you try directing for once? Let's see what you can do directing your own stuff. And this is what came out of that. I'd seen previews for it, very limited theater release. I mean, this thing did not get a wide push by any means. A much, much smaller film, even with the star power behind it. So I caught it, you know, on demand or HBO or whatever, a few months after it came out, whenever it was available outside of theaters. But that was my first experience with it. Brad, I believe I was sitting in your basement the first time I saw it. So fun little tidbit there. So let's get into it, guys. Let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game, and then we'll have a conversation about this. Brad, against all odds, somehow the Lord shone upon you the last time
we played this. The movie Miracle was about the last Rotten Tomatoes game between Mike and I.
That is very true. You did take down the big Russian beast, Mike Duranik. So now you are in the hot seat. You have to guess first, and then it will be me with the opportunity to try to snipe you one way or the other. So, Brad, what is the sitting Rotten Tomatoes score of Wind River. He forgets that we are on a Zoom and I can see him looking up the answer on his phone.
He's just trying to get an idea from my wife of what it is, but jokes on him as he texts her. She's already asleep.
Ah, there we go.
I see that the text says unread. So, wow, this is a tough one, simply because outside of hearing you talk about it, Ethan, I've, you know, never heard anyone's opinion on this movie, really nothing else about this movie other than your opinion on it. So, I'm going to factor that in plus my thoughts on it. And I'm going to say it's coming in at a 90. I think this was probably pretty well received critically.
Well, let me state, I guess I'll some spoilers here for myself. If Rotten Tomatoes didn't put this at 100, my answer to the next question will be yes, Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. But I do want to play the game, and I know that it won't be at 100. I'm going to actually go under your score simply because, if I remember, the most egregious thing to me is that this didn't even get nominated for anything. Not just Fish Porn Boy won awards. But if I remember right, this thing got snubbed across the board. So I'm going to say 89. It's going to hurt me, and I'll go on a diatribe about that in a little bit.
Yeah, sell out. You sold out just to win the game.
I may have. Mike, do you have a response for us?
Oh, I'm so not used to having to look these up that I had to figure out where I was looking it up. I was in the Wikipedia entry and couldn't find it. But I came back out, and what Google tells me is that the sitting Rotten Tomatoes score as we speak of this is 87%. But the audience score, Brad, is at a 90.
Okay. I think that's exactly what The Dark Knight Rises was at.
That is correct.
Last week. That's interesting. So I guess I won. It doesn't feel good. Feels like I sold a piece of myself there to do so. Let's get into it, guys. I'll ask you the question. I've already given my answer, but I'll extrapolate that upon that here in a little bit. But is Rotten Tomatoes correct? 87%. For Wind River.
I don't know how far off a number needs to be to call it wrong. But I'm going to say the number's wrong because I think this movie's fantastic. I think this is in my wheelhouse for things that I would enjoy. And I think me putting it at 90 would be a bit low for... That was an attempt to win the game. I think probably I would put myself at a 93, 94 for this one. I think it's just, it's superb. I think, you know, if I tried to nitpick it, I don't think there's a whole lot there that I could nitpick. A couple of screwy things with the timeline on when they show the assault scene. But other than that, I think it's really, really well done. So I think the number's a little bit low, probably by 5 or 6%.
Yeah, I think it's a very well done movie. I don't know that I'd go quite that high, but I think the proper rating is probably right where the fans have it. I think probably just right around a 90. So it's a little low, but again, kind of considering how close the critics and the fans are, I think upper 80s, low 90s, that's where this movie should be.
The way Mike started that sentence, I thought that he was about to rip my heart out. I thought you were about to say, like, you know what? This is actually a steaming pile of crap. Maybe it's fresh, but okay. At least as long as we're sitting at 90, I can breathe easy. I think in terms of the quality of this movie, the best way I can describe how great this movie is, this is actually the first movie I ever showed my girlfriend. Maybe not a great choice. Based on content, but it popped up on Netflix. I love it. It is actually in my top 10 favorite movies. If you cut out the other 40, this is actually in the top 10. I promise. I'll show you guys a list if you need to see it. You know, I loved it, and I, but I said, I was like, look, it's about, you know, here's what it's about. Like, yeah, it's rough. Like, if you want to see the whole movie, more power to you. About an hour in, I'm going to step out of the room for 5 minutes. I don't ever need to see that again. You know, but, you know, okay. And she was willing to watch it. She then went back and made her roommates in college watch it. Now, not only, so it says something that, like, first movie that a girlfriend watched, but the fact that she went back to a group of females and said, hey, look, as this is the, but we need to watch it. And they all loved it too. Like, this movie, yes, it's brutal. That scene, I'll never forget. I mean, the first time I saw it, because there's the knock at the door and they do the little twist of, like, you know, where they go to with it. I mean, I remember just wanting to throw up when I realized what was about to, like, you see that it's her and it's confusing. Or I guess you see John Bernthal first, which, you know, shouts to him. It, that dude, we talked about how intense Tom Hardy is. He's right up there for, like, when that guy's, like, pissed off. One of the most intense dudes in Hollywood. See him, you're confused. Then you see Natalie, and it, like, oh God, like, okay. And, but it, the way the tension is built leading up to that, scenes that don't even involve that, like, I think this is just a masterpiece of filmmaking. And it shows Taylor Swift. Brad, I know how big a fan you and I both are of Yellowstone. Mike, I wish you would hop on this train with us. You must. It's almost required viewing at this point. But this guy just has such a grasp on the frontier. I get, like,
is this the spot we're going to talk about Taylor Sheridan, or are we going to circle back to it?
Yeah, we might as well. I mean, it's kind of all part of it, because he is just as much a star of this movie as Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen, in my opinion. I mean, I watched this movie when it was 100 degrees out last week. I'm sweating as I walk in my house, and as I'm watching it, I'm ice cold because of the world that they put you in and the way they describe what they're going through. And all, like, it's just, he builds this world. So we could talk about Taylor Sheridan on this podcast. We've now done two of his movies. I don't know if either of you guys have seen Hell or High Water. I almost guarantee you haven't seen his newest one, but, like, this guy is all the way up on, oh, his name is on something. I'm there. Let me turn everything else off. What do you have for me?
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I think kind of this guy is low key probably involved in most in more things that I'm entertained by than just about anybody else. Like, you can argue that, you know, I would not fight anyone that told me two of the shows that he's been involved in are the greatest shows on in television history. If someone wanted to argue that Yellowstone was the greatest TV show ever, you know, I wouldn't be able to fight them too much on that. If someone wanted to argue with me and say Sons of Anarchy is the greatest TV show ever, I wouldn't fight with them on that. And he is involved in both. Plus, you know, like you're mentioning, the movies that he's done, I have seen Hell or High Water, and I'm fascinated by that one too. It's not as good as Wind River, in my opinion, but also entertaining. But yeah, he hits all the right notes for me, I guess, and the things that I'm entertained by. So, I too, will be on must-see TV for anything that he's going to put out in the future. So, but yeah, Yellowstone and Sons of Anarchy both, are what I attribute to him first. And then these movies that he's involved in are just gravy on top of that.
Well, you know, I just looking back, I'm not super familiar with him. I will get to Yellowstone at some point, but, still finishing up odds and ends of other television shows. And there's only so much time when I get to rewatch movies with you guys. That takes up most of my viewing time. But when you say that he, you know, has the frontier down, I mean, all the way back to his acting in a bit role for Walker, Texas Ranger, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Boy, I mean, he really is kind of typecasting himself in this regard. You know, all I know him for really is this, and then having written Sicario, I think I've heard of Hell or High Water, but I am pretty confident I've not seen it. You know, you raised the question as you were playing the Rotten Tomatoes game, Ethan, about was this, you know, that you didn't think this was even nominated, and it was not. But I suspect that if we really think about it, we all know why that is. You know, this was released in August of 2017 and was produced by the and distributed by the Weinstein Company. 2 months later is when all of that stuff broke with Harvey Weinstein. And I suspect that this being the last major movie that came out prior to all of that breaking probably made it so that the Academy just wanted to pretend it didn't exist, much like they wanted to pretend that Harvey didn't exist.
That's a great point. And I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I mean, you're probably spot on with that.
Which is a shame because this movie unquestionably is better than, I think, it, from what I've seen, what I've heard, at least half of the movies that were nominated this year. I would still say this is the Get Out year, correct? And I would still say Get Out, I think, should have still won Best Picture that year. I would watch it over this one. I think it's a better movie, but this is a really well-done movie. And it's a shame that it got looked over, probably because of politics and trying to avoid bad publicity.
Well, we had this, Get Out. We just talked about Dunkirk. In a couple months, whenever it comes up, I mean, spoiler alert, unless somehow, like, The Rock is actually magically an option again, I'll be picking Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, because that's now available to us in 2017. I mean, it was a great year for movies, as Brad's fist pumping to that choice.
I mean, I will say that as much as I love Get Out and as much as I love Wind River, that the Three Billboards movie might be better than both of them.
Well, maybe it's a group pick then.
It's fantastic. So I will be looking forward to discussing that one with you guys.
That'll be then. So let's, with Wind River, talked about Taylor Sheridan. Let's talk about Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen. I'll contend this and, you know, can kind of give you guys a little bit to maybe look at his filmography. He got nominated for Hurt Locker. Most people on the street, if you ask Jeremy Renner or ask who he is, and then you say Hawkeye, you'll get the nod. I think this is the best work he's ever done. And people I know at the time, regardless of the politics on the side of it, contended he just didn't do enough. There just wasn't enough. I think that's what makes it so great. This is just kind of becoming a weekly thing. When did Ethan cry during a movie? I cry every time when he gives the monologue about his daughter. That scene, you know, yes, sometimes you need the Mark Ruffalo in Spotlight, right? Sometimes you need that intensity in a scene and someone gets nominated and that's great. But man, the way he just lays that story out, you can tell it's like breaking him apart inside, having to even, you know, say the words. And you get those couple of tears, and then the last little comment about, like, you know, it doesn't matter who she wrote that poem to. All that matters is that she wrote it. That whole thing, I mean, that monologue is perfection, and I think this is the best work Jeremy Renner's ever done.
I mean, outside of the remaking the Ed Sheeran song on the Jimmy Fallon show, yes, I would agree. But when he changed the words to the Hawkeye, that's clearly his best work. But I can't argue that point. I think that you know, as good as he is in the Town and Hurt Locker and that, I think that this is the one that I would pick as well.
Yeah, The Town is immediately what jumped out to me. And then even before you said The Town, I was running through it, Brad, and going, like, that's a great role. He does a great job. But there is just a controlled, controlled kind of tortured nature to him that he plays so well in this. And it comes out in a couple of those scenes. I think that this is got to be the best that I've seen him in. And it, again, it shows that, in addition to being, you know, Ethan's favorite musician, he's a heck of an actor too.
Absolutely. I'm upset he didn't cut a song for this movie.
I'm so glad he didn't. It would have ruined it for me.
I think part of it too, like this is for me, I think what I connect to a lot. And Mike, I know, I think you and I have had conversations about this, Brad. I don't know if you've really seen any of his catalog, but I grew up on John Wayne movies. And John Wayne is, he is larger than life. He's not a real human being. He almost is a superhero of his time with the movies he made. Like, Corey's character in this, Jeremy Renner, it's almost like it, that's like the image that 5-year-old Ethan had of what John Wayne could actually be like. The way he walks in, the way he controls the room, the talk that he has with her dad about like, they're, so you're helping him, huh? He's like, well, that's what they asked me to do, but you know what I'm doing. Like, the, he went out with a whimper. Hope I didn't steal anyone's favorite line, because that's a great line. Those things, like, you know, in that scene at the end, I mean, if this takes someone's favorite scene, sorry, but that's the greatest revenge kill of all time. I know I'm throwing out a lot of hyperbole in this episode, but bring it on if someone's got a better. Because, you know, what better way than to explain you are weak, you are trash, she was not, than that revenge killing. Maybe I'll save a little bit more of that conversation in case it is someone's favorite scene. But just, yeah, he never gets too high. There's a couple times where he does get a little low, but it's just that steady thing. And then acting off of that, Elizabeth Olsen, which this is a little bit different because all I ever knew of Elizabeth Olsen was Mike, like you said, that's Scarlet Witch. Scarlet Witch is in this movie about this. Like, this is, she better be able to bring it. And she does. And it's crazy that she does because, and now I've seen her in more things, and she is a very talented actress. But in 2017, to go from Avengers Age of Ultron to this, it's really impressive the way that she does it. And she brings a lot of emotion acting off of Jeremy Renner.
Yeah, I think her performance is very well done. They both did a phenomenal job. Even the bit players around them, I thought were well cast and did a good job. But she in particular, it makes sense because when I saw even just some things like WandaVision, right? By far, I think the best thing that Marvel has done since, you know, Infinity Wars and the Spider-Man coda or whatever to the Infinity Saga. And so much of it, I think, is the depth that she brought to that show, the way that she was able to act all those different period pieces. And so you look here at this and her playing this FBI agent who is there, doesn't, you know, she doesn't think that she's going to be staying there. She's just there to quickly do the job. Then all of a sudden she's in and she's trying to figure out how to help and how to get this done. She does a great job. So, yeah, definitely won me over and would be excited to see her in more things as she moves forward.
Any side characters stand out to you guys that you really want to touch on? I mean, I think everybody did a fantastic job. Gil Birmingham, I think, is always great when he pops into things. Graham Greene has been around forever. Was there anything that any shout outs that you guys wanted to give to any of the side performances?
I mean, I think you touched on it. There's so many good ones, and everybody just nailed their stuff that no one in particular stood out because it was just well done all the way around.
I mean, even all the way down, he's got two scenes, but James Jordan, the guy that plays Pete, I mean, he plays a great slimy asshole, like, and in a way that's not over the top. I think what makes it so scary is that there's nothing unbelievable about that scene. Right? Like, there's no part of that where it's like, this has kind of gotten, all right, like, you've kind of lost me. Like, the horror of what happens mm-hmm. is that it not only could, but does. And they flash up that stat at the end of the movie, which really, I mean, the story behind this movie is that Taylor Sheridan heard about these issues, researched these issues, and as an auteur and a director and writer, the only thing he knows how to do is make a movie about it. Like, it's a real thing. And I think that's what hits the hardest, is that this isn't a fantasy. It's not real people, but it's still almost nonfiction in the way of he's telling a story about thousands of people just by focusing it on one. And that's what's crazy about it. But I already said John Bernthal's fantastic in that scene. I'm trying to find, I lost her name, but I think it's Kelsey Asbill is Natalie. And now she's had, which Mike, you'll see, a long run on Yellowstone. She's fantastic. Taylor Sheridan's getting his people together that he likes to use over and over again. And they all bring it, which is great to see.
A question before you move on. What would a love scene had done for this movie between the two of them, between Elizabeth Olsen and Jeremy Renner? Like,
I would.
I can't decide, and I'll step aside and let you do your lead into that or whatever you were going to do with it. But I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
No, I was just, this is why we make a great team, because I was about to ask you guys that question. So, Mike, where would you be at on some type of romantic involvement between Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen?
I think that would have been the 20 minutes of the movie that we would have been saying should have been cut to make this a really tight, impactful movie. I don't think that it would have played well. I think it would have, especially given the tight timeline as they're trying to solve this, it would have felt forced in. It would have felt unrealistic to both of their characters. And I think that it would have knocked this movie 20 or 30 slots down my rankings from where I've got it.
I think that they have romantic feelings for each other, or I at least think he has romantic feelings for her. And I think what makes it great is that they don't make it obvious. So when I watched it this time, because I was curious about that, and someone had mentioned that to me about the two of them and thinking they had chemistry, which they do. They're both great actors and they work well together. But when she comes over and he says, like, you didn't need to drive out here to ask me that question or to say that. And she gives a good response of like, I just needed to know why you were doing this and now I know. But there is that extra little look that he gives. And then, you know, him sitting in the hospital bed with her at the end, and he's reading the article about like the 10 ways to know that he's into you. These are the things I need to know. Like, there's just little, I think he does, but I also think he sees himself in such a way that it would be impossible for him to be in a relationship. Or at least he's so engrossed in what's happening that he would never allow himself to do that. So I think it's great that there's the little hints, but I think it would be going too far, especially with the nature of this movie and how they decide to portray certain things. I think a love scene would feel not okay.
So, the first thing I think of when I think of like I can't believe they didn't do something is in Rounders when Matt Damon and Famke Janssen were in the same room together, and you leave that movie thinking or that scene thinking like how did that not just happen there? But so the reason I asked the question is because that a similar thing crossed my mind when they were sharing the intense discussion at the house. She clearly came over for some reason. She did not need to go to his house. So like you get that sense of like why did she show up? You know, does she just feel safe around him? You know, is she feeling attracted to him? Who knows? But I don't think a love scene would have played well, like a sexual scene, but even a, you know, a handhold or a kiss or something in that moment, I think could have added a little bit of depth without taking too much away. But I think you guys are absolutely right. Like if it had led into a full-fledged, you know, sex scene between the two of them, it could have definitely taken away from that. And also too, like I don't know how old she's supposed to be in this film, but I think the whole like age difference thing would have played into that too, because there's definitely a an age difference in that character, and he would have been, you know, based on the timeline of his daughter's death, I'm guessing Elizabeth Olsen is probably not that many years older than what his daughter would have been in that film. So that might have gotten a little bit weird too. But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting question because it did cross my mind as I was watching it again this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think for a long time, movies trained me that sharing sad emotions and crying leads to sex. And it was a very hard lesson for an adult Ethan to learn that that's just not the case, no matter how much you expect it.
So all his girlfriends like, Ethan, why are you crying? What is going on here?
Yeah.
All I did was ask you what you want for dinner, and now you're crying.
Yeah. It's somehow it's worse than when I cry afterwards.
Oh no.
Never thought that's where this is gonna go. Let's do favorite scene from Wind River. I mean, well, I guess we'll see where you guys go with it. I mean, it kind of seems to me like it's a pretty obvious choice. But fellas, what's your favorite scene from Wind River?
I don't think mine is an obvious choice, so I think that we're going to disagree just a little bit. But mine's the first time that the cops and the FBI agents and everybody are getting together to go to the trailers where these guys are. By this point, you're not quite sure if these guys are bad, but you kind of have a pretty good idea. And, you know, they all meet them there. They've all got guns. You know, it's a roughneck crew. And, you know, then the flanking scene where the cops start to freak out and they all pull on each other. And, yeah, that's my favorite scene. Obviously it leads into the future scene after the cutaway and all of that. And obviously that's pretty intense, but I like the first one better because you don't know yet. Obviously, you know, after the flashback, what's going to be happening. But when they're flanking and you're not quite sure what's going on and they're screaming at each other. Yeah, just fantastic scene. And that's my favorite in the film.
That's a great scene. I suspect whatever you come up with, Ethan, will also be a great scene. But there was one scene in this movie that just had me laughing and nodding, and I was 100% there for it, and I decided I was going with that for my favorite scene. And it is very simply Jeremy Renner walking around back, picking up the shovel, yep, and clocking the guy when he comes out the back of that door just so nonchalantly. And that was a phenomenally done scene. I mean, it seems like a simple thing, right? Yeah, pick up the shovel, hit the guy. The way that Renner reads that scene and everything up to him just standing there and pop, hitting him with the shovel, just perfect acting. The scene played wonderfully. It's my winner.
That scene, that's what I'm talking, like Jordan Peele, right? We talked about Get Out, which came out this year. Jordan Peele is so good at building terror. I saw his new movie. I don't even really know how I feel about his new movie, but what I know for a fact is that guy can build terror. Taylor Sheridan can build tension. He's got the tumbling around. You know that dude's about to hit him with something. He hits him with freaking bear spray. And the way she like makes herself small and unloads and reloads and unloads again into him, puts him down, like, God, that scene is so good. And Brad, I guess when I said it's kind of obvious to me, I was not realizing that I was talking about like a 35-minute stretch of the movie, because it is when they show up to the outpost. Cut out the bad scene, and then the after effect, that whole fight, it's amazing. And what makes it so good, I think what's awesome, we talk about twists all the time on this podcast. There's no twist to this movie. What it is just there's a mystery to be solved, and the hard work that these people had to do, or just everything that goes into, like, we know the truth is out there, we just have to find it.
I think there is a twist, and I'll make an argument that it was the anti-twist. They did a great job of making you think that Matt was responsible for her death. And then they flipped it to where he was actually the hero. He died saving her life. Well, in the moment, saving her life, right, until she later died running away. But I liked the anti-twist there where, you know, you're thinking this guy's a piece of crap and he ends up dying for her.
Yeah, he allowed her to die on her terms instead of theirs, but I guess, so what I'm saying, that is, you are right, that's the anti-twist. But as soon as they roll up and you see that Hugh Dillon's got a black eye and the other guy's got like claw marks, it done deal, right? There's no like, well, is it these guys? Obviously it's these guys. And it's just the buildup of like, well, okay, if you just told me who it is, what's next, what's next, what's next. And so my pick then will be from the moment Jeremy Renner lets loose with that rifle. When Hugh Dillon is standing over her, his body goes flying. Is that really how their bodies would react? I don't know. Maybe. He is loading 50 cals into that gun. But good Lord, the intensity. And those guys are just like, well, we're still fighting. No, you're not. You're dead. And the guy that flies through the window. And then, of course, the revenge on Pete. And this is why I said, I don't think there's a better revenge kill in a movie than I've ever seen. And I don't think there's a better way to put on screen. Because, like, of course, like, this guy needs to die. He deserves to die. Like, he's scum of the earth. There's not people lower than him. But how about instead of our hero shooting him or stabbing him or you're going to feel the pain that you put someone else through. And while you feel it, we're going to prove to you that you're actually not a man. Because he does what makes it 100 feet. Like it's intense. It's violent. It's gross. But it is amazing the way they do that. And it feels so satisfying. I mean, I know I sound like a psychopath saying it feels satisfying watching this guy die. But oh my God. They could not have done that better. And I don't think any other movie's done it better. So my favorite is, you know, getting Pete out there, giving him what he deserves. But there's so many. What Mike talked about, the conversation between Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen, there's so many scenes. So speaking of conversational pieces, were there any lines that stood out to you guys in Wind River?
For me, it's after... he has to, you know, go see the dad and have that conversation about what it was like when his daughter died. And, you know, don't forget the memory or don't squash the pain because you're not doing justice to her memory. That one for me is what took it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's that monologue that he gives, the dad there at the very end. And, it's pretty powerful. So nothing really to add there other than.
I don't know if you're talking about the same one, Mike, you said at the very end. I'm speaking of the one earlier where it ends with he says, well, then get off my porch and go do it. You know, they have a monologue at the end as well. That's very good.
I think I'm thinking of the one where he's talking about not hiding from the grief and instead dealing with it, because then otherwise it'll rob him of the memory of her. And I thought that was at the end, but I may have been mixing it up with the middle. I do remember what you're talking about, but either way, those two scenes of the interaction between Renner's character and her dad, I think that the dialogue in both of those are the winners of the movie.
I think for me, I mean, those are both so great. If you guys went there, I'll probably go the conversation he has with her brother, because I love him just cracking that dude in the head for talking about his daughter and just setting the tone there. But then he says some really poignant stuff about, like, you're going to lecture me about protecting people when you do what you do, like, look what you chose. And then he caps it with, you know, her brother says, I get so angry all the time. I just want to fight the whole world. And he says, I did too, but I figured the world would win. And just that, like, I don't know, I guess the self-awareness, he's been through it and he's still going through it, but he has the ability to say that. And then the John Wayne line of the movie, of course, is wolves don't kill unlucky deer. They kill the weak ones. And if you can find a way to use that more often in your everyday life, I think you'll be better for it. But that was our conversation of Wind River. I do want to ask you one more question, guy, because I don't usually do this, but because I love this movie so much, I'm curious where you guys are at with it. Did it crack top 10 for either one of you guys for the show?
It came in at number 17 for me. We've just got a lot of really good movies on there. I mean, going back through, you know, it's hard for me to put it above any of the ones I have up there, but there is one above it that I think I might need to swap and move a couple others up. So I'm going to look at my list later, but as of right now, it sits at number 17.
So when I started this podcast, it was sitting at about 35, 36. By the time I sent you guys my list, it had moved up to 29. And then after the end of the discussion that we had here, I could see it moving up. It's got to be mid-20s probably. I've got some reshuffling I need to do with this list, but regardless, I would echo what Brad said. We've got some incredible movies on this list. I would probably not have it higher than 25 because I don't think that it's as rewatchable for me as many of the movies above, and I tend to value rewatchability pretty high on my rankings, but it's definitely a really well done movie.
Well, that is why we have the conversations, guys. I'm always curious to see where you land on it. We hope that everyone else enjoyed this movie. Again, not one that a lot of people know about, but one I'm always willing to suggest because I think it is fantastic. That'll do it for Wind River next week. Big shift, big change. Going back into the superhero world we were in a week ago, but also a very different superhero world, much brighter, much more fun and vibrant one. And that is the original Guardians of the Galaxy, Mike's pick for the month of August. So that'll be next week, guys. We hope you join us then. Thank you so much for joining us now. Other than that, guys, for Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.